So this is Hope Gresser. I am in Ottawa, Ontario. Today's date is the 27th of July, 2020. And it is 2:30 Eastern time. And I'll just get you to say your name and where you're from, and I guess the time where you are, since it's a different time zone.
My name is Jason Zukowski, and I am in Red Deer, Alberta, Canada, and it is mountain time, so we are 12:30 p.m.
Great. So if you just wouldn't mind kind of giving a brief overview of who you are.
Oh, who I am?
Who you are, what you do.
Okay. So my day job, I am a high school chemistry teacher. I'm currently the science department head for our high school. So I teach at a large high school called Lindsay Thurber Compersant High School. Mm-hmm. Mostly I teach chemistry and the interbaccalaureate chemistry, and then I teach some general science. The other things I do, I have a podcast called The Science Podcast. And more importantly than all of those things is I have two dogs. One of them is definitely internet famous. His name is Bunsen, and he is a Bernese Mountain Dog. So he is Bunsen Burner, and he has a social media juggernaut account on Twitter that consumes my life. So I have a wife and two kids, and we live in rural Alberta, and I commute to work. And that's probably, oh, and I am a big nerd, and I do cosplay.
Right, great. So first question, because the way we do this is it goes kind of chronologically, but if there's at any point you think of something that you want to say, jump in.
Okay.
So what do you recall about the start of all of this? Do you remember when you first heard about the virus, and what did you think about it? Initially.
So there's a whole bunch of irony that has happened. In my science class, we were actually looking at the numbers in Wuhan, China every day and plotting the growth of the virus in Wuhan, because we were looking at how bacteria grow, and it's an exponential growth curve.
Right.
And they were experiencing exponential growth. And then it spread from Wuhan to Europe. And when it got to Italy, that's when more data, more reliable data, we'll say, quote unquote, reliable data started to come out, because things out of China, everybody was a little skeptical of with their government and the way that they operate with information. And that's when it got to Italy, and then we saw the deaths in Italy. That's when it started to get scary for kids. And I was kind of regretting that we were also at that point plotting the growth of the virus around the world. And kids were like, is it going to come here? And I'm like, probably not. And then literally about a week later, there were cases in Vancouver and Toronto. And then about a week after that, hockey shut down. And then we were shut down 2 days later. So it was like very, very quickly after I told the kids. I always approached it from don't panic.
Right.
It's spreading. Don't panic. Right. We're safe here. And then we weren't safe, or the idea was we weren't safe and we were being shut down. Like that happened happened extremely rapidly. I think NHL shut down Wednesday. It was a Wednesday, I think. I don't remember the date, the actual date, but it was a Wednesday. And then we taught Thursday, Friday, and Friday was a gong show. Because we were, as department head, we were meeting, like, what's going to happen? Everything is shutting down. I had kids. We were going to the Marine Biology Center in Banfield on Friday. Like, we were flying to Vancouver with this group of kids.
Oh, wow.
And that was up in the air. If it was going to get canceled, then it was canceled. So I remember it was very chaotic. And then the government announced school was shut down that weekend on Sunday.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say. So was it before or after? Yeah. Was it just kind of you didn't get to go back into the classrooms for anything, or was there a little bit of more leeway room, or was it just?
No, we were allowed. So there, to make a long story short, we were all of the teachers at our high school. Like, we were all professional. We were ready to teach kids Monday. We were totally ready to go Monday. like everybody worked their butts off on that Sunday once the announcement came off to be ready on Monday to teach kids online. And then the division was like, whoa, hold on, because not everybody was ready. Mm-hmm. So they gave everybody a week. So we had the kids were home for a week without learning. And then the following week we started. And it was a massive learning curve, I remember, for a lot of people in the department. Like it was like an emotional struggle. We had parents with young kids who lost care for kids. We had teachers who didn't use technology having to learn. Yeah. So it was, but we were allowed to come into the school. The school was not shut down to us. So I, being a leader of the department, I went into the school every day. And we just socially distanced ourselves. Like we would see each other at lunch and wave, right? But you were in your classroom by yourself.
Right. Mm-hmm. Then how did the kids handle that transition? So
I taught mostly academic kids. So like, cause the intervascular program is really academic, but I did have a science 20 general science class. So the kids were of course worried, like, how are they going to learn? What are we going to do? The academic kids were like, cause homework was due that Monday and kids were freaking out trying to hand stuff in, taking pictures of it and trying to send it to me by email. The less academic kids were like, woohoo, a week off, right? So they were like super happy. Just like I was happy when I was a kid when there was a snow day. I don't know if you had snow days out in Ontario.
Yes. Yeah. I'm in Ottawa. So you still get snow.
You get snow. I'm just trying to think, like, there's places in Canada that don't get snow, like Alberta.
Yeah.
Well, you do like Vancouver and it's like, you know, a little skiff and everything shuts down.
Yeah.
But the kids were happy. And then once we got into the groove of it, there was a huge buy-in to start with, but there's some kids that just never came back. And those are the kids we were all very concerned about, that when school shut down, they didn't engage, they didn't do anything, they didn't sign in, nothing. They just ghosted the school. Mm. So we're very concerned about those kids come September, which is like a month from now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what did a typical day look like before? What does it look like now? We've had a couple of different iterations now that there's been like stages and things like that going around. So I don't know, what did it look like at different points during the pandemic for you?
Okay. So my busiest day would be my youngest son. He's in grade 9. He's very good at band. Mm-hmm. So he would have early morning band that started at 7 in the morning. So I would get him to the school at 7. Either I would work out or I would work on getting prepped for the day. And I would have a very busy day. Like I would teach all morning, have lunch, and teach all afternoon. As department head, I got a prep. So I had one block of time. And I would use that time to work on department goals, troubleshoot issues other teachers in the department have, help them with resources. That was my day. And then when COVID happened, basically I didn't have to get to school as early because my youngest son wasn't allowed to come in at all. Mm-hmm. Band was canceled. There was no need for me to be in my classroom super early. So maybe I got into school a little bit later. And then I taught online. So the morning was prep. And then in the afternoon we had our Google Meets. So kids could log into Google and then meet with us. So that was the afternoon every day. And it became a blur after about 2 months.
Yes. For everyone.
Yes.
So because it's different for every jurisdiction and stuff like that, what are you guys doing as far as going back, since you said September is a month away?
Yeah. I'm just going to move locations.
Right
now, if you can give me 2 minutes in a quiet spot.
All right. Yeah. Not a problem. So just because it's different in every jurisdiction, what are you guys planning on doing in September? What's the plan in terms of going back to school?
We have no idea.
Okay, cool.
Zero idea. Very much a lot of stress, frustration, and panic. The government just announced that schools will be open, kids will be back. And like my chem classes have between 32 and 38 kids in them. COVID spreads as easily in a 17-year-old as it does in a 40-year-old. So we're like, what and the government made that decision while socially distancing themselves. So that was the big irony, right? Like they made this decision and they're, you know, they're 2 or 4 meters apart from each other. And yeah, so I am very, very frustrated. Like they're basically like, yeah, have the kids wash their hands. Good luck. Okay. So.
And have you heard, sorry, go ahead.
That's all we know. We know the kids are going to be back in September. It is impossible for us to socially distance our kids in high school. We are very, 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 very frustrated. I mean, I am not, I feel like I'm a healthy guy, but there have been people who have been 40 that have died from COVID. There's 50-year-old, 60-year-old people at the school, right? Who knows what these kids have at home if they're mm-hmm. living with grandparents. So I don't know. I think I am concerned about this decision, especially when other provinces and countries have had kids go back to school and done a better job of keeping everybody safe.
And
so that's more of a political statement, I don't hopefully, but that's my opinion. Yeah.
And what have you heard from other teachers or students about what their feelings on that are?
Well, the kids want to go back to school. The academic kids want to go back to school. Online learning wasn't great for anybody. Like, I'm not saying I don't want to teach kids face to face. I'm just saying that you cram 36 kids in a classroom with me. We're all breathing on each other. If one kid has COVID in that room, we're all going to get it. Like it's no different than like there was a Hutterite funeral in mm-hmm. Alberta, right? I don't know if you heard that in the news. There was like 1,200 Hutterites went to this big funeral in Southern Alberta. It was a tragedy. 3 kids drowned. So the families came. And then now we have huge outbreaks in Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba from this funeral. Like that was just, and that's just one funeral where everybody was joined together. Like imagine a school with 1,800 kids, no difference. You're just breathing on each other. Like it's going to spread, right?
They're now using those Hutterite communities as studies, as case studies to see how it spreads within closed communities since that.
Yeah. So that's the irony is what's a school? A school is basically a Hutterite community.
Yeah. Yeah. So are you spending more or less time inside the house or at home right now than you were before?
We are very fortunate. So we are very privileged. We live in the country. So our lives changed virtually nothing from COVID. I can spend as much time outside as I want as I did before because we live on a farm.
Right.
So I don't have to worry about anything with that. So I can take the dogs for a walk exactly the same way as I did before. I mean, when we shut down, there's still snow. So I was cross country skiing and snowshoeing. Nothing changed for us. So we were very, very privileged and fortunate. As opposed to like a family that might be in an apartment, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And since you mentioned the dogs, so that was how I knew to get in contact with you is I had followed you, your dogs on Twitter. So you use that platform to discuss science quite a bit and you have encountered some naysayers. Would you be willing to talk a little bit about that? And
yeah, Bunsen's account is so big now that any scientific posts that he does, he gets blowback because there's a fringe people that are conspiracy theorists on everything. The big one was masks, wearing of masks. And originally there wasn't a lot of evidence that wearing any kind of masks would help. Mm-hmm. And then because it's a new virus, as new research came out, science changes its opinion based on data. And now you should wear a cloth mask that does help. And there's been like enormous blowback from cloth masks. There's been some blowback that COVID is no different than a cold. So those people and Bunsen's a dog account, like 50% of the posts are adorable, uplifting, cute posts and 50% of them are science. And you're going to have, you have people wasting their day to try and argue with a dog. Like it's just bizarre, right? But I think because Bunsen, the account is a dog account, I get less of that than a human would. for sure. So, yeah, we do get some blowback. And occasionally I try and have positive discourse. But if it's a conspiracy theory, there's nothing you can do about that. Like, they've made up their mind. I can't. If you think Bill Gates is in charge of a new world order and wanting to inject microchips into people with a vaccine, there's really nothing a dog account can do to change your opinion on that.
Yeah. So have you, then when you said like that you think you get less of it, have you, because I'm assuming you are involved in the community online a little bit, have you been seeing that happen with other people and what has been their reaction? And
yeah, so it's kind of a hierarchy. If you're, and it's terrible, if you're a woman scientist, you get way more of that caustic, gross blowback. Okay. And if you're a person of color who's a woman who's a scientist, it's even more.
Yeah.
So Bunsen being a dog, he's like its own category, right? And they're like any female epidemiologists, you just have to go through their comments on anything they post. And it's way worse than what Bunsen gets when he posts. And it's just the misogyny that's out there in the because Twitter is, you can have an anonymous account, you know, you can say horrible stuff and hide behind an egg as your picture on Twitter. And I'm sure they just get tired of it and they don't even bother with those people. They just block on, cause that's what we do too. And
Right. Yeah.
So it's something that's, and maybe that's, on my podcast, I do try my best to promote people of color and who are female to get their, you know, their passion out there in science.
Right. Great. I'll jump back to you now from the dog. So how does this compare to any kind of epidemics, pandemics, health crises that you have lived through in the past? And how do you think, why do you think this one has been so different, if it has been, or is it similar in any way?
Well, I remember swine flu was a concern. Like we had kids that were out who got swine flu like a while ago, but it was not, like, it wasn't as deadly as COVID. Like COVID, that we won't know exactly the mortality of COVID, but early data has it anywhere from 0.5 to 1%. Mm-hmm. So that's like way worse than the flu and way worse than swine flu. Like swine flu was like maybe 1.5 times as deadly as normal flu. So kids got that and they were out, and it was so little of a problem for us that we would joke about it. The kids got swine flu, and maybe we would have like those thermometers and with the infrared thermometers, and we would like check kids' temperatures on the way into class and kick kids out if they were too high, kind of like zombies. Mm-hmm. So it was something we didn't really take serious. Whereas this is so serious. Like you just had to look at what happened in Italy. Right. Italy was, we were seeing thousands of people die every day. Right. Mm-hmm. And Italy's like a small country. So it was, made it very real that this was very serious. And then everything shut down so fast. So this is like nothing I've lived through at all. The most thing I can think about is my parents telling us of polio. Right. My grandmother contracted polio and then lost the ability to walk. And they would always, she would have stories about, during the time before the Jenner vaccine for polio, it was the same thing. Like weddings were canceled. You couldn't gather. People were terrified of getting polio. And there was no vaccine for it. And I want to say polio wasn't even as contagious as COVID.
Yeah.
I'd have to check the stats on that. I'm not sure if that's right.
I seem to recall that as well, but I also am not a scientist. So how is your... what's the mood with your family and friends, and how are they responding to this?
I think initially, because my wife's a teacher too, we were stressed about how to roll out online learning. Mm-hmm. And then once we got the hang of it, because we're both pretty tech savvy, it went pretty good. The stress level for us is rising because we're wondering how we are going to, and the kids are going to be safe when we go back to school, mm-hmm. right? My wife teaches middle school. I teach high school, middle school kids and high school kids spread COVID as easily as adults do. Mm-hmm. They just do. they are not as at risk. So that stress level is rising. There was definitely, with all of our teacher colleagues, there was like a, I should call it depression, because it wasn't depression, but we were all like, kind of like, not run down. I'm trying to think of the, like, our energy level was so low, because when you teach kids, your energy has to be match them, right? Mm-hmm. You're the best. If you think about the best teachers you've had, they're passionate and they're energetic and engaging, and that is lost with online learning. So everybody by the end of it, we're just like, oh, this is just, we were just, this is the worst. Everybody's safe. But where everybody was really, I guess, disengaged with their job, still doing the best they could, but yeah.
Fatigue. Is that the word you're looking for?
Yeah. Maybe fatigue. It's like every day blurred into the next, like, oh, yeah. It's like Wednesday. Oh, I thought it was Monday. Like, days had no meaning. Yeah.
And your kids, how are they, how did they cope with the online learning, and how are they doing?
My oldest son, he's graduated and he works in Save-On as a, in the meat department. So he kept his job. And at the start, he was really stressed out about how they would keep him safe, but he's far enough away from the public that he felt his job was kind of safe. And then my youngest son was little, for the first couple months, he was like, lost, because he's big into band, that was canceled. He's in marching band, that was canceled. Everything's online, and he's quite smart. So his online learning was done in about 2 hours every morning. So he's had a lot of downtime. Yeah. He's looking forward to getting back with his friends. But of course, that's the big issue, right? All the kids want to hang out with friends in big groups. COVID isn't gone.
What are the restrictions on that like in Alberta right now, in terms of groups and gathering and stuff like that?
It's any kind of gathering is discouraged, really. I think you can, I'd have to check the exact levels. I think you can gather in groups of 20 or less, but even that you're really not supposed to.
Yeah.
Like they're like limited as much as possible, or just don't.
Right.
But you hear every day about people having weddings of hundreds of people, and you're like, why? You know, like, I get it. You've maybe planned your wedding and it's time to have it, and but it's dangerous.
So if you were to be making an exhibit or writing a history book or a memoir or something about like that, about the pandemic, what would you want people to know?
I'm not sure. I would be curious what the historians recorded about the Spanish flu, because that was like the last epidemic that took the world hostage, basically. Mm-hmm. Was there the same level of it's not like it's a lot of people, but it's a certain percentage of people that think more about themselves than others.
Yeah.
Like if you're going to lose your job, I totally get that. I didn't lose my job. So I don't know what it's like for the people that lost their job and had to go on CERB from the government and wanting to get back to work. Like I feel for those people, but it's like the people that are like, you know, I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm going to have a gathering. My wedding's going to go on. I'm not going to wear a mask. Like, screw all you guys. I'm looking out for me. I'm more important. I'm wondering if that happened during the Spanish flu too, if that's just human nature. That there's this inherent selfishness in a certain percentage of people that no matter what anybody says, they're just going to do what they want to do.
Yeah.
And the consequences be damned.
Two things for the record, CERB is, just because Americans might be listening to this, or somebody else, yeah. CERB is Canadian Emergency Response Benefit.
Yeah.
And then, yes, as a historian, I can tell you they did. There were anti-mask meetings and organizations, and then they all also got the Spanish flu. So this is not unprecedented in the least in that regard.
No, it's just inherent in humans that there's a certain percentage of us that are just assholes, like just a bunch of selfish jerks.
Yeah. And then it was put into Canadian law that you had to wear a mask or you would be arrested. So,
well, we may get there.
We may get there. We're not there yet.
No.
Do you guys have a mask mandate now that I think about it?
No, not Red Deer. Calgary, Mayor Nenshi in Calgary, he just put one in that all public places, you need to be wearing a mask. I don't know if that includes school. Like the government in Alberta has been super coy about masks in school. Like I get not putting masks on a kindergartner kid because they're going to eat it or or fling it. But high school kids can wear masks. Like they can. Like you can tell a grade 10 kid to wear a mask and make it like you either wear the mask or you don't get to come to school. Like you can do that. So I'm not sure why. I'm not sure. Like that's a big puzzle for me right now. So, yeah. Well, that's good to know that there was just as many idiots back in the Spanish flu times as there is right now. So
yeah.
I think they just didn't have Twitter or Facebook or social media to spread their idiocy around as quickly.
They had leaflets, which is great because then we saved the leaflets, but you know.
Oh.
Yeah. So was there anything else that you would like to be on the record? Anything else you'd like anyone to know?
I think, like, because I'm a scientist and I teach science, I wonder if this needs to be a huge part of the next, like, teaching kids that the authority of science will change its mind based on data. That seems to be the biggest problem right now, is people are like, well, scientists said in January, blah, 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 and now they're saying blah, blah, blah. And it's just because I don't know if those people took an advanced science class that, that explained that science moves based on data. And it's not a conspiracy. It's not because, you know, there's a new world order out there lurking behind the We Charity or whatever the new conspiracy theory there is. But yeah, that's what I think people need to know from a scientific perspective, is that there has been, maybe not as much in Canada, but you can see it in the United States, a colossal failure of science education. Because which country is doing the worst right now? It's the United States. And and the amount of disregarding for public health is just, it's just bamboozling me.
All right. Maybe, well,
yeah, sorry. That's
no,
well, who cares? I don't know if anybody's going to listen. If you're listening to this and you're in the future, don't be a jerk. There's my PSA.
All right. Well, I think we're done then. If we don't have anything else.
Nope, I'm good.
All right.